the Health and Human Services Committee to order, and we'll start a public hearing on Senate Bill 44. And we have no one, you say, that wishes to sign up and testify? Okay, I'm taking it then that these amendments that we have, 44-1 amendments, have answered the problems that were in the mind of the folks that came to testify before. And so we'll be closing the public hearing and going into work session on Senate Bill 44. And we have the -1 amendments for us, which made the changes in name of the cooperating entity, and we took out the word needy. We inserted programs for the blind and eligible for programs for the blind to straighten up the language to make it more meaningful. And took care of deleting the words and phrases that supplemented and changed. So I think we've got it, at least to my satisfaction. I would entertain a motion to accept.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 44.
Senator Shields moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 44. There. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, just may I ask a question?
Certainly.
Can you tell me if right now the necessity of this is of such that neither department is talking to each other as to why?
Well, they have already talked. I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, the bill is necessary because they were not talking to each other.
You know, I don't know if it's that as much as it was just designed to delete the Adult and Family Services Division and put the Department of Human Services in it originally. Because there was more programs than what they used to have.
Right.
But I think they were, from all I know of, they were cooperating quite well.
I think they were cooperating quite well, but there were times when it's a commission for the blind, they were unaware of a resource that would be available through DHS.
Okay.
And to help bring more resources to the blind.
Uh-huh.
This just...
It makes all sense in the world.
Right.
I think it's great, Mr. Chairman. I just was...
what struck the whole problem to this bill was, and got the whole process stopped, was when they decided to remove the word needy, which wasn't politically correct.
I got you.
Well,
and so in the process of doing that, then we tried to get some type, because it was referring to a group of not just necessarily all of the folks that were blind or vision impaired, and so that started the whole thing. Then one thing led to another, and so we made several little changes there, which brought it the whole section up to date. And it was basically done in a congenial cooperative atmosphere here, so I don't think anybody, once they got it around worded like they wanted it, I don't think anybody had any particular reason to come and testify.
Okay.
Another comment, the term needy blind really is kind of pejorative.
Okay.
Kind of language out of the 30s, if you get my drift.
Okay, I did.
And the update, removal of the word seemingly opened the doors farther than you wanted, because not all blind would meet the criteria for DHS services. Anyway, it's a good bill, I think.
Thank you.
Well, it just brings up the fact that things change regardless of whether programs change, things are added, and if we get to the point where we think we've done it all and we don't ever have to visit this for 25 years, we're probably fooling ourselves. Further discussion? Questions? Hearing none, so ordered. Would entertain a motion to put the amended bill.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shields moves that Senate Bill 44, as amended by the -1 amendments, be sent to the Senate floor. Is that with a due pass recommendation?
You said it, sir.
Okay. It'll have a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, will clerk call the roll?
Senator Stewart?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye, and let it be noted that Senators Messerly and George are excused. The motion carries. Is this one that I should do again?
Sure, you do it.
Not my turn, okay. Senator Fisher will carry the bill.
Sorry, I didn't mind.
Now we have, we'll open up for an informational meeting. We have invited testimony on quality initiative for nursing home care, and we have a sign up to just have the people just well invited.
We just have our invited testimony right here.
I have a witness that was supposed to be doing the testimony that I'm awaiting, and I might give you a little introduction to the subject matter. I apologize, she has not yet arrived at the Capitol. For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Healthcare Association. We have for, I'd say the better part about the last 2 years, been talking with officials at the Senior and Disabled Services Division and some other related parties, the Ombudsman's Office and others, around making changes to the nursing facility survey and enforcement process. Most of the regulations that govern nursing facility quality are federal regulations, so we have very limited state flexibility in what we can do in regard to regulation of nursing facilities. One of the greatest frustrations we've had in the provider community, I think, historically has been that we've got a system that does not necessarily focus on quality improvement and outcomes as much as it focuses in on regulatory compliance.
Jim, I'm going to have to stop you just a second because I've got to gavel down to the committee for testimony.
Okay.
We'll go back into full committee.
Okay.
Well, since you made that little stop, Mr. Chairman, let me ask one question. And both because of you and the senator who's been involved in this business, you can go on and I'll wait.
Welcome, Senator George. We'll go back into full.
Sorry about that.
So you're saying that mostly all of the regulations around nursing homes are basically federal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that's correct. Nursing facilities are largely governed under what's known as the OBRA requirements, which are federal requirements that lay out the survey and enforcement and regulatory oversight process. And most of what we have in state statute and state rules actually shadows the federal requirements.
Thank you.
I got to look back and see if Dan Barker with the state is taking exception with anything I'm saying. Okay. Dan runs the nursing facility program for Senior and Disabled Services Division. And so what we have been interested in doing for some time was developing an alternative survey process that was more focused on quality improvement, positive outcomes, tracking of outcomes, quality indicators and outcomes, and really trying to devote more resources in this process into improving quality and improving care as opposed to just kind of a regulatory compliance process. A lot of legislators, when I've discussed this issue, look at the analogy of OSHA, where they have the voluntary compliance division on one hand, and then they have the other section that goes out and enforces the regs. And so we had started about 2 years ago some discussions with the state about looking at some different models, looking at some different things we could do. And I think there's been a lot of widespread agreement within the long-term care community that there's really a need to be able to focus more regulatory oversight and resources on facilities that are having quality problems, having some, you know, difficulties, as opposed to some that historically are performing better. And so we've developed a model, essentially, that we're calling the Oregon Quality Improvement, Oregon Quality Initiative, that would allow the state to stagger survey intervals of when they would survey a facility. So, for instance, if you've got someone who's been having some issues or some quality problems, instead of surveying them once a year, under this proposal, they could be subject to more frequent surveys. If you've got another facility that has been deficiency-free and their quality indicators and other things that are being tracked by the state all continue to be positive, you could actually stretch that survey interval out to a little bit longer period of time between surveys so that you could focus more time, more effort on those facilities where it's needed. The other thing that we have done is we've built in a pre-survey technical assistance consultation and then a post-survey technical assistance consultation process where surveyors would work with the facility to identify quality issues, to identify best practices, to work with them on other things that are designed to improve the quality of the care and the services being provided by that facility. One of the nice things whenever you have a change in administrations in Washington, D.C., is that you get a new group of folks back in the different federal agencies. And with the change that we've seen this year, a lot of people believe that the Health and Human Services Department and the Healthcare Financing Administration, HCFA, will be more receptive to looking at waivers to allow states some more flexibility in the area of nursing facility survey and quality improvement programs. And Governor Thompson, now Secretary Thompson from Wisconsin, who's taken over at HHS, has a bit of a reputation for having been an innovator when he was a governor and as someone who sought many waivers, some successfully, some unsuccessfully, from the federal government during the time that he was the governor of Wisconsin. And so the LC draft 2284 that you have in front of the committee is a pretty simple legislative proposal that basically, have to check and see if my witness is arriving, excuse me, that basically directs the state to seek the necessary waivers to allow this demonstration to go forward. What we would like to do is if we would receive the federal waivers, we would like to be able to try a demonstration project for about a 3-year period of time, study it, evaluate it, and see if we're getting better outcomes, improved quality through this alternative survey process as opposed to the one that's strictly mandated under federal law today. So, and I apologize, I will have some handouts here momentarily when my witness arrives that gives you a lot more detail on the actual demonstration project and gives you some examples of the kinds of quality indicators that the state would be tracking and monitoring in between surveys. We do have a requirement under federal law that's called the minimum data set, the MDS requirement, where nursing facilities transmit electronically data to the state on clinical indicators, quality indicators for all the residents they serve. And so the state can track and they can monitor these quality indicators in between surveys to see how the facility is performing in relationship to how it's historically been performing in different areas of care, as well as comparing them with other facilities in their service area or in the state or in the nation as a whole. And there's a host of these different quality indicators that can be tracked. And so this demonstration project would be relying on monitoring of those indicators in between surveys as well.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Thorne.
I want to ask, Jim, in looking at this quality initiative, if the state were to accept the pilot program that you have, it is kind of interesting to see the example that you gave in terms of if a nursing home is not having problems and over a period of time, if for maybe 2 or 3 years period of time that nursing home is still found in favor, that when that happens, that you can spend more time on those nursing homes visiting more often, the ones that are having trouble. in the event one of the nursing homes that have not been found out of compliance, and something does go wrong, and there's a system that does not show they had not been checked in the last 6 months, would you not be concerned about the onus of responsibility at that point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, there would be a couple things that could trigger, that could still trigger a survey during that period of time. They have what are known as complaint surveys.
Okay.
And so if you did have a complaint that triggered a survey, that would still continue. And also, you would have some other criteria built into the proposal. So when they're monitoring on a quarterly basis the MDS quality indicator data, if they saw some things spike up, and I've got some reports here, and I apologize on the handouts not being in front of you right now. I just have the one copy. But on the different types of reports, if they would see some trends that were disturbing for that particular facility that became apparent that there was something going on there, they would be able to come in, and that would be able to trigger a survey as well. But in terms of on the distribution of the kind of what we would see the impact being based on the estimates we've done in the modeling with the state, for about half of the facilities out there, their survey frequency would remain the same as it is today under this proposal.
Mm-hmm.
For about 7 to 10% of the facilities, they could have their survey interval go from the current, which is from every 12 to 15 months, they could have that extended to every 21 to 24 months under this proposal. For about another 10 to 20% of the facilities, they could see their survey intervals go to from 15 to 20 months.
Joe, let me ask you this. In terms of the extending as well as the shortening
mm-hmm.
time, along those lines, how many agents, how many nursing home facilities that in our state now has had maybe a 5-year clean slate with no problem? Do we have any of that data now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I don't have the 5-year clean slate. We did calculate for on 2 consecutive deficiency-free surveys, we're looking about 10%. And it's very difficult to be deficiency-free. It's a very rigorous survey and enforcement process. I'm aware of at least a couple facilities that go beyond the back-to-back 2 consecutives, but it's still it's the exception, not the rule, to have consecutive deficiency-free surveys. So, and you've got about, we've looked at kind of the distribution, you've got probably about 20 to 21% of the facilities who would see their survey frequency increase either to from a 6 to 12 month period of time or on a 6-month period of time. And so we'd see about 1 out of 5, every 5 facilities in Oregon, who would see the survey frequency increase. And I mean, at a common sense level, what this would do is it would enable the regulators, if you will, to be able to focus their attention, to be able to focus their limited resources where there have been some identified issues, and to work with them on a program that, in addition to just having maybe a little bit bigger stick from a regulatory standpoint, but they would also be working with them on a quality improvement, technical assistance, consultative basis to try to see if you can address the issues, to try to see if you can make a difference in affecting positive outcomes and improving the quality of the services there, which is what we believe ought to be the ultimate goal. Obviously, a regulatory system there is there to protect the public, but we think also that there ought to be a very strong goal there to make sure that we're ultimately improving the care and the services to the greatest extent we can.
Just to play devil's advocate for
mm-hmm.
a minute, Jim, what if the limited number of regulators and with the limited amount of resources you have were, say, surveying the nursing homes that got the good grades just once a year and concentrating their efforts over on the 20% that need improvement, what's going to keep, how are you going to make sure that they don't miss one of these that's been getting a good passing grade because, you know, they're only going to see him once he, if that were the model that, we chose. How do you sharpen up the that once-a-year thing to make sure that somebody can't just sneak by, and so you've got really no oversight for, say, a two-year window?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, there's a couple different safeguards built in the proposal. First one would be if you have complaints or a survey that's triggered by a complaint survey would still go ahead and would be triggered and could be conducted under this, even if you had someone who'd been, you know, back-to-back deficiency-free surveys and had earned the longer survey interval. The other thing is that they do monitor data on residents' clinical indicators that the state facilities have to report that, transmit that to the state, and it's then monitored by the state on, I believe, a quarterly basis. And I'm looking back at Mr. Barker. Is that correct, quarterly? Okay, annually, quarterly, and with a change of condition. And so when that data, that information is received in Salem, if they're sitting down on a quarterly basis and they're looking that there's been some significant changes or there's some things on that data that's spiking and looking a little bit different than the profile that has been there for that facility before or for that facility compared to other facilities, that's something that they can then begin to investigate, and that potentially could trigger an additional survey inside that extended survey interval. So, I mean, it's instead of just surveying at the intervals mandated under federal law, this would give quite a bit more flexibility to the state to essentially allocate the resources and to track and monitor, you know, what's going on out there. One thing I will mention is that we're probably looking at a general fund fiscal of about $121,000 for the biennium if we were to receive the waiver and this were to be implemented. And we've had discussions about the potential of looking at supporting that through increased licensing fees so that we would essentially be looking at considering shouldering the burden for the additional expense of that.
Questions?
Yes, Senator Carr.
Have you talked to some of the state people yet?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, we've been discussing for going back close to, I think, 2 years now around the model and how this would work. And I think we've largely come to agreement with a process and a model that, folks were comfortable with. This is not anticipated in the governor's recommended budget. So this is not an executive branch proposal before the committee today. I don't want to speak for the state, but I believe, based upon conversations I've had, that it's a model and a process that they are comfortable with. And believe me, this is something that we wouldn't have brought forward for discussion before the legislature unless we believed that they were comfortable with kind of the process and the model that we've laid out. I think our biggest stumbling block as we've had these discussions over the last couple of years is that we didn't think that it was very likely we would find a receptive ear in Washington, D.C., for this type of a proposal. And as we sat back after the election prior to the start of the session and tried to make some determinations on legislation to bring this session, we felt that, there was a strong likelihood that climate was changing in Washington, D.C., and that the timing for this type of a proposal might be good at this time.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim? I was, as I was reading, particularly on page 1, line 18 and 19, about the idea of decreasing the adversarial nature, I'm thinking about a couple of things that I've heard over the years, and one of them was, I can remember when I had a problem, government helped me solve the problem, but today, government is my problem. And I thought about the comparison between the screaming parent and the supportive, guiding parent, and how they deal with the exact same problems. And of course, what I found, because we do deal in a very heavily regulated climate with the Department of Ag relative to inspection of the plant, okay, you find out that when they're coming in trying to help you to solve a problem, okay, you respond beyond what they ask for. And when you mentioned OSHA, I can remember we had the friendly OSHA, you know, inventory. What was interesting about that process was is they came in, gave us some great ideas, you know, you could do this, do that. And then we went through the, you know, the process of doing everything that had been asked. that had been recommended. But the thing on the other side of that that scared me half to death was to see when he responded back what the actual regulations contained within it, the very threatening type language. And I thought, you know what? I just wonder if that threatening language should only be reserved, you know, for the renegade type, that the rest of us who are trying to be deadly do right here, mm-hmm. that you would, in fact, treat us as if we're professionals trying to do the best job we can. And what we need is support and advice. And, you know, like you have training down here. Yeah. I mean, I think this is just a really great way to for government to evolve back to what it used to be, and that was a friend trying to help you solve a problem of compliance with a goal the government set. So,
well, Senator, I think you're...
Question, isn't it?
Well, I'd like to respond to a few things you said, though. I mean, you're correct in that the tone, I think, we would like to try to inject back into the process is more of one of these... you know, on trying to get to the positive outcome, trying to improve the services that are being provided. I think the state's got a very important role to play wearing the regulator hat to protect the public. And I don't think we want to blur the responsibilities between their obligation and their need to protect the public and to help. But by the same token, surveyors who are out surveying a lot of facilities and working around the state see a lot of things, and they see things that work, and they see things that don't work. And right now, they don't have the ability to be able to share with you, say, well, I see you're having this problem, and, you know, we were last month out there, and they had the same problem. Here's what they did to solve it. It doesn't work that way now. Under this proposal, we also have taken great care in making sure that the survey team that would come in for your actual survey will not be the same surveyors that are working with you on the technical assistance and the consultation piece, because we wanted to make sure that we maintain the integrity of that role, that dual role that the state has here. But we feel that the survey process would be far less demoralizing to staff, to the nurses, the caregivers, the professionals, if we are able to move in this direction and to put more of a focus on the quality improvement and the technical assistance. And that's why this is laid out the way it is laid out, where that is kind of wrapped in on either side of the survey, both prior to your scheduled survey and after your scheduled survey with that piece.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Jim, I noticed you talked about best practices. So do you plan to have a repository at the association office of best practices, so when you do workshops that you can respond to the best practices piece in yours? What is the role and responsibility of your association in addition to the role and responsibility of government along the lines of best practices?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, actually, you all see us up here from the association standpoint advocating down here and doing the lobbying and government relations most of the time. Really, the other half of our mission as an organization is really professional development and education. And we run about 4,000 long-term care professionals a year through training programs, workshops, conferences, others that are to a large extent focused on best practices and other similar subject matters. The quality improvement consultation piece and a piece of this proposal that's called regional peer sharing forums would be the primary mechanisms under this proposal to share best practices information, and we feel and have found that peer sharing is very important. If you can get professionals together and create the climate where they can talk about different issues and challenges that they all face in common, that oftentimes that's a very effective way to educate people and to get them the information, the resources they need. So that would be a big part of what's built in, both from what we do on an ongoing basis as a trade organization, but also built into the actual proposal on the peer sharing forum piece of it.
Jim, that was something that I used to decry, because the inspectors would come, and you didn't always have, years ago especially, you didn't always have any idea of what they were really anticipating or expecting. And oftentimes they would come in and really where the law was a little shadowy or vague, they would demand certain things, and you would ask them, well, how do I go about this? And, well, we don't know, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disconcerting to me, because to me, I looked at those folks as being potentially the best source of information. They got a chance to travel all around and see mm-hmm. the nursing homes and see, and I beg them, I say, okay, you're pointing this out. Now, just, I said, I know you can't tell me what to do, you know, because mm-hmm. of your liabilities and all that, but tell me, just give me the name of somebody I can go talk to,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the field. I said, you ought to be a repository here for helping us upgrade, and it takes a cooperative element there. I ran on a few operators from time to time that said, boy, we've developed this, don't let it out under any circumstances, and they generally weren't around very long, a year or two, sometimes less, but you know, I never minded sharing something. If I'd figured out a way to treat people, what did I really want to do? I wanted to not only provide the best care I could for the folks that I took care of, but I wanted to also do the most I could for my profession. And so I was very glad to share something that I had gotten that solved my problem with someone else. And I never found out that you throw some of the bread out on the water like that, since you don't have a lot of it coming back to help yourself out. And I think this would be an extremely good idea to do, because I think we still have a bit of that problem. It's tough to get out all the time and do all of this talking, and so people that are circulating around in the other nursing homes and things like that at a level that they're examining and seeing and finding problems and dealing with problems, they've got to be one of the best and richest sources of best practice ideas that we could have.
Mr. Chair, one of the reasons why, and we've had some long discussions with the folks at the state around some of this, one of the reasons we wanted to try to institutionalize this change on the technical assistance and consultative pieces, because you always have a certain percentage of folks out there who are going to perform at a certain level and exceed whatever standards or regulatory standards that you have in place. Now I got the expert here. But we felt that by institutionalizing the change and building it in as part of the actual survey process, that we would then require everyone to participate in such a fashion. And I'd like to say also that we work very closely with the regulators here in Oregon at Senior and Disabled Services Division. And while the nature of the system is maybe adversarial in that they're the ones that regulate, and while certainly Oregon has some of the most aggressive surveying enforcement that we'll see around the country, we have excellent communication with the folks who run the program at Senior and Disabled Services Division. We have good dialogue back and forth, and if they're seeing issues and problems that are popping up frequently around the state, they'll try to identify those for us. We will try to then jointly work with them to develop education or resources to get out to the provider community. And so I just want to, you know, take a chance to compliment them and the work they're doing, because we do have a very good relationship.
Yes,
sir. Yeah, Jim, I just wanted to know, if we now disregard everything you've said and listen to her, what do we do next?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, I've been up here doing my best, but my real expert on the subject matter has arrived, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce Margaret Murphy Carley to you, and she's a nurse attorney. That's our deputy director and general counsel for the association, and our resident expert on quality and the survey process. And I've given them plenty of background and history here, Margaret, and what I wanted you to do was just to give them kind of the brief thumbnail sketch of the actual demonstration project itself. And I've covered already that it would require a waiver for to change the survey intervals.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Fisher and the rest of the committee. I apologize for my lateness. The two things of modern, my cell phone battery died on the way down, hence not being able to call Jim and let him know that I was running late and I needed to get gas. I wasn't going to eke out those 40 miles between Salem and Portland, so my apologies again for delaying you. I wanted to talk today about the Oregon...
yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jim already did, but it means he gets you.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. I'm Margaret Murphy Carley. I'm the Deputy Director and Legal Counsel with Oregon Healthcare Association. Been in that position about 9 years. And according to most people on the hard drive with all of the information that, that you're looking for, hence the comments. Jim has given you the background. I'll talk a little bit about the proposal itself. There's actually four elements in the proposal. One, which would require a federal waiver, and that is to vary the survey cycle. Currently, under federal regulation, nursing facilities are supposed to be surveyed on average between 12 and 15 months. We're proposing to vary that cycle. In addition, we have a state law which requires them to be surveyed annually, and this bill that we are advocating for would give you a ability for the 4-year time period of the demonstration or 5-year time period of the demonstration to waive that requirement as well. Another element of the proposal, and I'll go through each of them in depth, is providing some technical assistance from the surveying agency pre- and post-survey. It's a model that's used successfully with OSHA and other things where there's a technical assistance component as well as then measuring or evaluating compliance. The third element is actually using data that we now collect as part of our comprehensive assessment of the resident, which are transformed into quality indicators. And actually at the back of the materials I've given you are samples of some of those quality indicator measures, and bringing facilities together to discuss what they have done about particular quality indicators and then how they could improve performance. That's what we call the peer sharing component. So bringing facilities together to discuss how can we have better quality, how can we improve things, how, for instance, did you reduce the rate of decubitus ulcers or reduce the use of restraints in your facilities, and how would we benefit from that. And lastly, we would like to provide some quality assurance training for the nursing facilities so that they understand the tasks that are involved, how they can go about undertaking quality improvement activities, how they can identify what the priorities would be for quality improvement. And so those are really the four elements of the proposal. The only one, as we've described before, the changing the timing of the survey, which would require a federal waiver. Is there questions then about the four elements before I go into a little bit more detail? What we've provided you in a handout is actually the description of the project. And it is still, we revise it occasionally because we continue to come up with some new issues. So you'll see that it was last revised 9/19 of 2000. We have had some preliminary discussions with our regional representatives at the Healthcare Financing Administration and have tried to keep them informed of our progress, as well as trying to keep the advocates and other interested parties informed of how we were moving forward in this proposal. The technical assistance component, we imagine that that could be done pre- and post-survey, that during that technical assistance that they'll focus on the facility's performance, what areas need to be improved, and if there's particular resources that need to be brought in to help with improvement, that the technical assistance folks can bring those resources in. They might be internal consultants, they might be external consultants. There may be somebody in the local AAA or other area that could be as a resource, and that would be applied to help with the problems that were identified. Should performance be identified, the responsibility remains in the hands of the facilities. This is not an effort to shift responsibility to the regulators for performance enhancement, but to have them provide technical assistance. And we would also broaden the pool beyond just the surveyors. It could include other people that are state employees that might have some expertise. We would also do, as I said, the quality improvement training, and that is to get everybody a baseline on how do we read these reports, what information are they collecting, how do they indicate a problem or not a problem, what kinds of practices could you use to help solve the problems. And in the past, the quality resource team, which is now part of Central SDSD but was a part of the survey team, actually had a quality improvement aiming for excellence program. So we don't plan to reinvent the wheel. We plan to sort of dust that off, update it, and move forward with doing some training on that, training the providers. In addition to the consultation, we would have the regional peer sharing forums. And that's where we would review all the quality indicators. When I'm talking about quality indicators, I'm talking about a set of measures that HCFA has pulled off the minimum data set. They include things like the number of medications, with 9 or more meds being the target, the number of falls, the number of fractures, the some of the quality indicators indicate are what they call risk-adjusted. So, for instance, developing a pressure sore when you've been identified to be at low risk, or developing a pressure sore if you've been identified to be at high risk. So some of the quality indicators are risk-adjusted. And the surveyors actually use these quality indicators to help pick the sample that they're going to review, as well as to evaluate facility performance. And the quality indicators we track over time. That makes them different than the surveys. Right now on a survey, you go in, you do your inspection, and although you are looking at current and past performance, it's a snapshot of what the facilities are doing at the time. The difference with the quality indicators is that it's an over time measurement of quality, and it gives you, again, a longer range picture of the quality at that facility and possible problems, as well as possible improvements in their performance. So what we would have is regional meetings where we would target some particular QIs. Maybe, for instance, in one region, they have higher scores indicating the potential for problem in a certain quality indicator. We want to bring the folks in those regions together, talk about how the information is collected, making sure we're collecting it in a standardized format, and then how we could improve the results in bringing down those scores and sharing sort of best practice information in a regional area, and we would do that around the state over time. The last piece of the project is the varied survey cycle. Even though we currently use the MDS data, when the surveyors are picking who they're going to target for review in the facility, we're not really using it in other ways, and we think that the quality indicator data should be one way in which we target which facilities need to be surveyed with what frequency. The other factor that we looked at was also just the number of deficiencies. A deficiency is a finding of noncompliance on a survey. We would look at those two things and actually try to break up the facilities into five different categories. And based on the category or class that they are in, that's going to decide what level of survey intervention are we going to see on their behalf, with the goal of targeting facilities with a poorer history with more frequent surveyors, and targeting those facilities with a better history with less frequent surveys, which we think is a more efficient use of state resources rather than to survey everyone at the same frequency. In order to look at that, we looked at all of the quality indicators and we picked a sample of them that we thought were representative of some quality or possible quality problems at the facility. Also, ones that varied among providers. If we picked a quality indicator that everyone was good at, that wouldn't help us, for instance, determine which class or category that they should be. So we picked a sample of the QIs, and those are listed in here. They include the prevalence of falls, the prevalence of fecal impactions, the prevalence of urinary tract infections, weight loss and dehydration, prevalence of little or no activity, and the presence of pressure ulcers when a resident had been identified at low risk. Based on we chose the 50th percentile as the rank. We then divided people into category on the basis of their survey history and on the basis of their quality indicator. And based upon that, we came up with a survey frequency. In our demonstration, we envisioned that no one would be surveyed. The outside time that a facility could be surveyed was from 21 to 24 months. Again, we gave a range because the survey is supposed to be unpredictable. You're not supposed to know in advance when the surveyors are coming in. Generally, you have a pretty good idea. If you know that it's approximately an annual survey, you can pretty much guess. If it was in November last year, you're pretty likely to have it between October and December of this year. But because of the range and because of not having predictability, we varied the range. So at outside, facilities that were in Class 1 would be surveyed from 24 to 24 months. In the Class 2, those facilities would be surveyed 15 to 20 months. And in that case, we estimate there would be about 10 to 20% of the facilities in the class. There's currently 153 licensed nursing homes. And in the Class 3 facilities, they would be surveyed the way we normally are now, between 12 and 15 months. And we estimated that 50% of the facilities would be in the class. So for the majority of the facilities, 50%, they would not be surveyed with any less or any more intensity than we currently provide under the current laws and rules. For the Class 4 facilities, they would be surveyed every 6 to 12 months. Those are the people that we think have some problems with the QIs or citations at certain levels, and I'm going to talk about scope and severity levels in a minute. And lastly, the last class is actually a class that HCFA has identified. They made each state pick at least two facilities that they identified as special focus facilities, and they're required to be surveyed every 6 months. So we just kept the class five, the every 6 month survey for the facilities. And an estimate number of the facilities in that class is only 1%. Let's talk again about the survey process. Every time you have a deficiency cited, the surveyors are required to assign a scope and severity of that deficiency, and we do it on a letter grade. At the very back, I think it's the last page of the handout, is a description of how that scope and severity is determined. Now, they do this for every deficiency, and there are over, I forget the exact number, 541 or so different categories that they look at for federal surveys, and actually, let's see. Class count 522, federal requirements that they look at on a survey. In addition, they also survey for compliance with the state Oregon administrative rules. But for anything that they identify as non-compliant, not in compliance with the regulations, they assign a scope and severity. And so you can look at this box. The letter grades are A through J. At the grid coming down, you're looking at whether it is an immediate jeopardy, and there's a definition of that, whether it's actual harm to a resident that's not immediate jeopardy, no actual harm but the potential for more than minimal harm that is not immediate jeopardy, and no actual harm with the potential for minimal harm. So those are considered the severity grades. The scope is whether it happens in an isolated time, whether there's a pattern, or whether there's widespread. And depending upon the scope or severity of the most severe deficiency, that governs what penalties or remedies they impose. So each deficiency is given a grade. If we take, for example, the grade G in this grid, that means that that deficiency was an isolated incidence of something that caused actual harm that was not considered to be immediate jeopardy. Actual harm is could be considered to be injury, either psychological and or physical injury to a resident. So if a resident suffered a pressure ulcer that should have been avoided through facility practice, that could be considered to be actual harm, would not likely to be immediate jeopardy. If it occurred on an isolated basis, one resident, they would give that a rating of G. And so the higher, if it's a J, K, or L, the worst score as it is, the lower the A, B's, and C's, sort of like college, the better the score, although I never had a college grade that went to L, I don't think. And based on that, that's also how we divide it into class, with the assumption that if you have something that's immediate jeopardy or you have something that's actual harm, that's, again, more likely a harbinger of poor practice, and therefore people that have those types of deficiencies would be surveyed more frequently than those who don't. And that's how we created the classifications for the purposes of determining where you would be in the survey cycle. There's been pressure to try to change the survey process. We are hopeful that HCFA will respond to that pressure by allowing waivers. We're very optimistic with the new Secretary of HHS that HCFA may agree to allowing us to waive the survey cycle. There's been at least one other proposal, South Dakota, which submitted involving an alternative survey cycle and using quality indicators, but we have significantly scaled down our proposal so that we are hopeful that HCFA will approve the waiver that we need to move forward with this process. That's it. And then we added in, for the purposes of the study, some study questions or research questions that we'd like to evaluate, because we'd also like to know whether doing something differently, changing the survey cycle, providing the technical assistance, holding the peer sharing conferences, will actually show improvements in facility performance again. And we are hopeful that they will, and so we actually have a series of research questions that we'd like to answer about the demonstration project, which would give us argument about why we should do things differently or why we should keep doing the things that we're doing in order to improve performance of facilities and improve the quality for our residents. There's a series of questions that we would answer. We also want to capture the fiscal information about, for instance, does providing technical assistance save you money in the long run because you're avoiding problems or preventing future problems? So actually collecting data as well about the fiscal impact of the project. I don't know if Jim had a chance to talk to you all about what we estimate that this will cost. Did you cover that piece?
Yep.
Okay, then I will await any questions that you have about the proposal or the draft piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, maybe I missed it. I had to step out for a little bit, but I'm curious. You talked about the cycles in which you would do your inspections. What incidences or what would happen where you would break that cycle and come in?
Yes. Thank you, Senator Fisher, Senator Messerly. We have a series of pieces that we talk about for breaking the cycle. Those would include things like change of ownership. So if you have a new owner that comes in, they would also potentially include change of administrator or director of nursing services. These don't automatically break the cycle. They're an indication that we should look and see if we should continue with the same cycle. Also, if there's multiple substantial complaints that indicate a trend or a significant impact on resident well-being. And in addition, the state always has the authority to come in at any time in any way. So we don't alter any of their current authority. If they believe that they need to come in for the inspection, there's nothing about this proposal that would change this. What we are changing is the routine scheduling of an annual review or performance. So the protections that would occur if you think there were significant reductions in the quality of the facility remain into effect, and we have not changed them anyway in the demonstration project. In addition to the surveys, facilities are also separately investigated for complaints, usually through the local Adult Protective Service office, occasionally through the use of the survey team. So we have also kept that process totally intact. It's not at all impacted by this proposed demonstration.
There's also the ombudsman.
Yes, yes, Senator Fisher. The ombudsman's office would continue in their same role. And actually, the ombudsman's office is also invited to attend the exit conference of any survey. And in addition, the surveyors in the survey protocol have to contact the ombudsman's office in advance of a survey to see if there's any unresolved issues or complaints or any information that the ombudsman would like to give them about the facility's performance. So those remain. We have not changed the survey process either, other than by adding a pre- and post-technical assistance visit. So we've tried to keep major components of the system intact, but alter the cycle and provide the technical assistance in the proposal.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, also the feds can come in and do a certain sample of federal surveys each year in all the states, and so this would not change whether you would be subject to a federal survey.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. You also monitor the patient load and the staffing loads. I'm trying to think of situations where there might be illness. That goes through the community and just not be able to get enough staff in or in those kind of situations?
As part of the survey process or the complaint investigation process, if there was a complaint about insufficient staff, that would be investigated either through the complaint process or the survey process. Right now, the state does not track everyday census at a facility or everyday staffing at a facility. Based upon either complaint or on their annual review, they will look at that information, but there's no system now of communicating. You do have to, for instance, communicate, for instance, if you change your director of nursing service or something of that, but there's no standard report that says, this is my staffing, this is how many patients I have. Now, on the quality indicator data, which we transmit at least quarterly, that does have demographic information that includes the number of residents you have and what the payer mix is, but no one is tracking it to say this facility had a huge influx of patients, for instance, to see that.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jim's giving me notes here. In addition, under the Oregon administrative rules, we do have resident to staff ratios in the Oregon administrative rules. But again, you don't send a daily report saying, I'm in compliance with those ratios. So that's checked typically upon complaint or on your annual review.
Yeah, thank you.
Jim or Margaret, How close do you think you're going to get to covering the $121,000 with fees? I mean, is there maybe a provision in the bill that would, if it was advanced and you couldn't collect it, it would then fall inactive, or how that works?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator George, obviously understanding the difficult budget situation the state's in this year, as we looked at this and looked at potential fiscal impact, one option that we have had discussion on, and we haven't had any formal action giving us approval as the organization to lobby for this, but we have had discussion with our policy committee, was that we could look at doing a fee increase to support the costs of the demonstration project. And so that's something that we've had internal discussions on and consideration, and something that we're willing to take a good look at. So it's at $121,000 for the general fund for the biennium. It's not a huge number as these things go, but it's something that we would certainly take a look at on the fee side.
Mr. Chairman, I know this isn't an absolute parallel, but I want to tell you we have something that keyed into my mind, reminding me of a certain practice that we're doing in ODOT, and that's called the green light. If you came by the Woodburn inspection station for the truck, you know, you've seen the towers mm-hmm. out there. And one of the things they do is they plug in numbers similar to what you're doing here. You analyze the person's operations and then determine, based upon their performance, whether or not, if all their weights are fine, do you call them in for inspection or do you send them green light by? And of course, the incentive built into there is to maintain your fleet so that you're always running legal.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the parallel here was just perfect from the standpoint that you want to encourage people, you know, by support and by incentive to make that change to be at maximum compliance all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me, Senator, we tried to exactly do that, to provide a carrot. The carrot is less frequent inspection, but in addition for that less frequent inspection, you have to have the results that show
mm-hmm.
that you merit the green light, and that's exactly the approach that we were trying to take, is to provide an incentive for improved performance and have performance improvements occur from the ground up with recognition of that through a carrot. Primarily, the survey and enforcement side has used sticks, not carrots,
yep.
So this is a change in practice.
Mr. Chairman, if we can solve the money problem, I love this bill.
I just might comment, too, in the 33 years of experience in this process, this is just one step in a metamorphosis of inspections. It used to be that we used to have about 4 full-blown inspections. A lot of folks don't realize, but these take a lot of time to just handle the inspection process. So technically, the more of these that we can get away with is just that many without doing, is just that much more time that staff has and different ones have to work in the nursing home on those problems. And it is a huge incentive, and I know that it was a great easing of tight staffing, tight dollars, that kind of thing, when we finally didn't have to do a full-blown one for the VA hospitals. We didn't have to do one for the state. We didn't have to do one for Medicare. You know, they started combining them all into one, basically, and the federal government worked it out so that the state was their inspector and worked for them. And then they do, as was mentioned, have these spot checks where they'll go in and go to the different states and check out a certain percentage of the homes. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's worked out quite well. And there is, and I can say that myself, there is a great desire on the part of a staff to provide that type of care, because that becomes also a morale booster and an indicator that you're on the right track. And
mm-hmm.
I know probably the first thing I look at when I receive the Oregon Health Care is I turn to the back there and look and see who's had deficiency-free surveys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just always there as a stimulus to do better.
Chair Fisher, may I ask a question?
Yes, certainly.
Regarding your pose research questions or your evaluation, I guess. Really two-part question. Is this set up to like a baseline to see where we're at now in terms of nursing care and to see where the program takes us? And is it going to be designed such where you can perhaps ascertain, as hopefully things improve, which of these like four or five components are really making an impact, which ones maybe need to be modified, dropped, so we just don't say the whole package by itself has done improvement, or we might want to drop or change one component of it, maybe boost another one. Has that been thought through? Or
in the research questions, we actually tried to determine the impact of the varied survey intervals on survey performance, and then also the varied survey intervals on quality indicators, how that impacted the quality indicator trends. And we have a separate question about whether peer sharing, consultation, and more frequent surveys impacted. We weren't sure we could pull out the analysis that says if we see quality improvement, it's a result of this element versus this element. And we thought that if we only use the varied survey cycle, we don't provide sufficient carrot for the facilities to wish to participate, that you also have the carrot of technical assistance, and you also have the carrot of the regional peer sharing or best practice sharing. And so I don't honestly believe that we're going to say this had the most impact on quality improvement, assuming we can show quality improvement. So the questions did... We did look at the impact of the varied surveyed intervals because those are the ones that require the federal waiver of the change in state law, and therefore we thought we had to measure them more specifically. But we thought, actually, we had numerous discussions about this, and we thought it would be very difficult. You'd have to do some kind of regression analysis, you know, multivariate analysis, and that was way too complex for what we were trying to achieve. We'd also originally hoped to have an outside review by, you know, sort of independent research-based group that could look at some of these elements. But again, it added sufficient additional cost that we didn't think we could build it in the proposal. But in the best of all worlds, we would have an outside reviewer say, this is performance before, this is performance in the past, and this is what most contributed to quality improvement. But we were unable to do that. So instead, we'll focus on the impact of the survey cycle and then overall on the other elements together.
This isn't entirely unheard of either in licensing. There are now groups that are licensed instead of every year, they're licensed for a 2-year period of time.
Currently,
with the education that has to be done, continuing education over a 2-year period of time rather than a 1-year period of time, there are several advantages to some of these things to doing that. It's much easier to keep track of. It just takes half the time to qualify for. You have a chance to bunch hours into something that's meaningful. If you've got an opportunity maybe to go to university or take an extension course or something like that, you get more good out of it than you do if it's just chopped up in little tiny slices. And it's much easier to monitor. It takes less time to monitor and some of those things too. So I would say that if a program like this were to show some real good potential, it would have a tendency to perhaps eventually not have to be funded separately. It could save enough money. It would have that potential that would basically pay for itself, or it would be a better system. So, did you have further folks that wish to testify? Were the first folks in the audience that wish to testify? Dan, did you wish to? Thank you.
I guess our proposal now is to go into work session for the introduction.
Thank you.
This is a committee bill. Thank you very much for coming. And so I will close the informational meeting and open a work session with the proposal that this would be introduced as a committee bill. And this, let's see here if I've got that. Oh, I see. I thought perhaps she was. This was LC Draft 2284 that we're considering here.
Are you ready for that?
Thank you, Senator. I hate to disturb you. We have gone into a work session to consider LC 2284 for the sponsorship by the committee as a possible committee bill.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carter moves that we take LC 2284 and introduce it as a committee bill. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Mazzoli?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Chair Fisher?
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Carter.
I just wanted to say, I think any time organizations look at things for greater efficiencies in the system, I support that. And I also want to applaud this organization at a time when we're experiencing great cuts and, may I say, Mr. Chairman, far too many cuts in the human services area for them to be trying to build a program of efficiency. So I'm just hoping that all goes well for this quality initiative demonstration project. And I feel very good to be able to support this.
No, I guess I better open that work session back up here because I sat here without thinking that I probably, because of my involvement with the nursing home aspect of long-term care here over the years, should declare potential conflict, even though I no longer have nursing home interest.
Mr. Chairman, we do accept your potential conflict.
And so I will close that work session again. And Senator Carter, would you be so good as to possibly have a motion to suspend the rules and allow these two errant gentlemen to vote on Senate Bill 44 as amended?
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Suspend the rules that my two colleagues might be able to vote on the first bill for the blind that we voted for.
Any objections to Senator Carter's motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Open the work session on Senate Bill 44. Would the clerk call the roll?
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Mazzoli?
Aye.
Motion carries, and I am going to carry the bill, so that will relieve your minds of that. I didn't assign it to one of you anyway. Close work session on Senate Bill 44, and that concludes our work today, I believe. Is that correct? Okay, committee, thank you very much for your attendance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was assuming we were...